good evening, everyone, and welcome to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. Vlogcast that started as a combination of spite and the Streisand effect to try to answer the questions of why. We have a rotating panel of guests on to try to discuss the questions and to try to come to a better understanding of a question, because sometimes the journey is more important than the destination itself. I'm your host. I'm Shujin Tribble Kawanishi, known on the Second Life and around all over the place. I was originally born in Brooklyn to a Roman Catholic household. I grew up on Long Island, now live outside of Buffalo, New York, and I am an unabashed atheist. Joining me this evening is Unrenown Tech.
Hello. I grew up in New York, although a more rural area of it. I grew up in a mixed household. I currently reside in Southern Maryland, and I am completely ashamed at what I've done for a Klondike bar.
And surprise guest this evening, rounding out the trio this night, is Joey.
Hi, everybody. Joseph Cox. I served as a armored crew member for the Army for 8 years, confirmed atheist, and expert in absolutely no field, but I've dabbled in my fair share.
So, for those of you that are watching, first off, of course, thank you very kindly. If you'd like to take advantage of the question and answer system here, by all means, feel free. We'll be more than happy to tackle the questions that come up for the evening. And who knows, you might even spark a future topic for a future show. If you have something a little bit more involved, of course, please, by all means, send me an email at shujintribble@gmail.com, and we can see what we can do about that. In the link for the description field, you will also find a link to the future possible topics. If you have something that you'd like to make a vote for or even to suggest your own, please, by all means, utilize the Google Drive and the email, and you can send it on over to me, and we'll see what we get from that.
If you want to take advantage of me, I'm a sucker for Star Wars.
Which, of course, means that this was just your month, wasn't it? Anyway, so this is the episode for May 11th, 2014. This is Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. Yes, I'm going to keep doing this kind of shit because it just feels good. No, this is not the Not Safe for Work episode. That is going to be the 20th episode, but we'll talk about that later. We're going to be talking about a topic that came through a while ago via email from longtime listener and follower S. Ross. Now, there have been some contentions about the stuff that's been going on, and that's okay. We don't have a problem with that, so if you have questions or comments and you think that they might be a little incendiary, dude, just do it. We like it. Don't worry about it. You can't piss us off. Really, you can't.
If we weren't going to be incendiary, we wouldn't bother doing this show.
Exactly. I mean, the whole point of it is you can have your thoughts, you can have your considerations, you can have your opinion. You may be wrong, you may be right. But the important part is trying to understand the why, which is the entirety of why this started. So the email came through as follows. The Bible contains vast allegory, historic and cultural situational context, and countless language idioms from the time it was written. Why then, like both atheists and Ken Ham do, read it word for word literally? Well-educated theists and denominations read it as it was written to be read, allegorically, historically accurate in parts, and with the deeper theological intent first and foremost. Therefore, should one have some formal education or not, before cracking open the book and interpreting it? So this starts off to be a very interesting question. The question is, if you're going to go and read the Bible, should you have some foreknowledge about it from people who want to discuss it and teach about it? So, Tech, you started to talk about it before we came on, so I'm going to throw it over to you first, and go ahead and, you know, bring your thoughts back up and kind of run it from there.
Well, my first thoughts when I first heard the question really put forward was, what kind of formal education are we talking about here? Are we talking about biblical studies, in which case people who have already interpreted the Bible for you are trying to tell you how you're supposed to read it and how you're supposed to think about it and how you're supposed to interpret it. Because if you are, that's not really, you're not really thinking for yourself. The thinking's been done for you, and they're telling you that basically this is the outcome you should get, and if you're not getting it, you're doing it wrong. And I can understand something in the science field where you're trying to do a mathematical formula following a strict set of rules, or a scientific experiment that's been repeated over and over again, and in the criteria that you're using, you should get results X, Y, and Z, and if you're not, then there is something wrong going on. But we're talking about the Bible. You know, this is not a scientific manual. This is not a mathematical manual. Are there some math and science in it? It depends on what angle you look at it, but there's a little bit, but it's not the whole thing. Now, if you're asking whether or not people should have formal educations in terms of math, science, art, you know, basically your grade school, you know, from kindergarten all the way up to 12th grade high school and graduate, and get your GED or whatever the case might be before reading the Bible, I think that would actually be fantastic, because a lot of people have some form of religion. It's not just Christianity. It's some form of religion. Whatever is popular in the area that they're born into is the first one that they're usually exposed to. It's the first one that's usually being imposed upon them, and it's usually their parents. Because they kind of live with their parents, you know, common sense there. I would really love to see something where, okay, before you can start imposing religion on children's will, they need to have time to be children. They need to have time to have fun and enjoy life, grow up, learn the basics, the fundamentals, as we call them, which is the math, science, the reading, the maybe even a foreign language or two. Before you start throwing theology at them, or mythology, or however you want to think about it, you know, I haven't thrown Odin at my son, or Thor, or any of those kinds of gods. And at the same time, I also haven't thrown at him any of the Judeo-Christian god. I haven't thrown Abraham at him, or any of those. And I haven't thrown Hinduism at him, or Taoism, or Taoism. He's asked about God a few times, only because the fact that when he asked about why lightning makes a big boom, instead of receiving the answer of how it actually works, his mother, who doesn't understand a lot of science or math, or much of anything else, really, answered, God made it that way. To a fundamentalist, that's probably a perfectly good answer. To a they're probably very happy to hear that answer. But for somebody who wants to learn how the world works, that's not a good answer. That doesn't explain how it makes that boom. So, yes, I think a formal education of the basic fundamentals of our educational system. Granted, it's not the best in the world, but we could do a lot worse. Should be given a chance before people go, oh, you can't teach them evolution. It's because the world is only 6,000 years old. You know what? Let them learn about evolution. Let them learn what the science community has to say about it, because it takes time to understand that. Okay? And then if they have all the understanding about that and they go and look at the Bible, and they end up believing in your, or any holy book for that matter, and they've already had that educational background, and now you introduce them to religion, and they end up believing in your religion, well, gee, you know, isn't that what you expect to happen in the first place? Why not let them have the education to begin with?
Should be interesting. Joe, I know that you've got yourself muted at the moment. Were you going to go ahead and chime in at this point, or?
Yeah, I just kept myself muted because of, I don't know if whether or not I've got background noise coming at you guys.
No, so far you're doing okay. So go right ahead.
But, or what's his name?
I'm not going to say, I try to be as anti-inflammatory as possible. Shujin, you know me as well as anyone. That's kind of hard for me to do. But in regards to the idea of teaching the Bible and all that, look, I've got absolutely no problem with you raising your kids and teaching them, you know, what you were taught as a child and what you believe in. But at the same time, give them the chance to decide for themselves. Teach your kids about your family's religion. That's mine did. But my mother to this day still looks at me and says, you know, I'll pray for you or God bless you or whatever. Despite knowing that I am, you know, completely and totally a non-believer at this point. But she respects me enough as a human being to never, ever, ever try to start a fight. I mean, not the kind of person my mom is to begin with, but other people and other members of my family, minus my brother, they see no problem with it. There's no difference to it. I am the same person that I was when I was growing up with them. Albeit, you know, missing a few parts. But let your kids decide for themselves. If you want them to be exposed to, you know, religion as an educational system, I don't wholly agree with it from my own standpoint, but if that's how you feel you want to raise your children, that's fine. But allow them the chance to experience other things as well, because and respect their decisions. I mean, you can just respect your children's decisions, basically, because that revolves around so much more than just religion.
There's that. Okay. There's a couple of things that I want to make sure that we hit and cover, because I get the funny feeling that there is a piece of what Tech was just talking about that I need to play devil's advocate for a second before I go ahead and talk through my piece of it all, which is the idea of reverse indoctrination. Now, there are going to be some people who are staunchly religious who would say that the stance of make sure that you do not teach religion of whatever facet until science, and then allow religious education of whatever kind, could be considered reverse indoctrination, indoctrinating into the religion of science before anything else. Now, I've heard this argument before, and I personally find it to be a crap argument. However, that's my opinion. Now, of course, as we know full well, the why on that becomes a little bit squirmy. Those who accept, there's a reason for using the term, for those that accept the scientific literature and the scientific findings and such, do not see this as a problem, because if you have an understanding of how the facts are understood in the universe, in reality, and how they're gone through, you've got a better understanding of the universe, ergo you can understand what's actually going on, which sounds really stupid. Well, if you understand it, obviously you understand it. So you understand it, so you understand it. I know it kind of sounds like it's just the same thing overlapping itself. But this is one of those things where you can't unring a bell. You can't put the genie back. You can't unbreak a glass. No matter which way you go when you do it, you get the secular education first and then biblical, or the other way around. You're going, just like with one of those old classic choose your own adventure books, you're going to follow whatever pathway that's going to take you. And as soon as you make the trip down one of those paths, to paraphrase, you chain us all irrevocably. You're just going to be going down whatever path that is, and there's no going back from it. So it's a tricky course to try to figure out which way you're going to go. And if you guys see me playing with my eyes a little bit, if I'm blinking a little bit more, if I'm squinting a little bit differently, my contacts have not been playing nice with me recently, so I'm a little hazy on them right now, so forgive me.
Notice you got a little bit of red eye going on there.
Yeah, the thrill a minute. In my particular case, should there be formal education before cracking open a Bible? I'm thinking about this in a little bit of a different method. So let me talk this one through. The way that I'm understanding the question is, should someone be formally trained about the Bible first, before learning it, before actually reading it? And taking the question from that angle, I have to say no. One should not be formally trained about the Bible, formally educated about the Bible, before reading it. And again, this is a little bit different from the tack that you guys have been taking it from, so let me kind of talk this one through a little bit. It's been assumed and taken as gospel, forgive me, I'm not trying to be cutesy about it. It's been expected that the Bible is the inerrant word of God, spoken on high, transcribed by man, re-transcribed over and over and over through the ages by man. However, my thought about it from an abstract is, first, why would the Almighty give this information only to the absolute highest people, the priests, to disseminate it to everyone else? Would it not be much more efficient to make sure that any and everyone is able to read this for themselves to come to a better understanding of the religion and God itself? And I'm saying itself and not himself, because I want to use a general neutral in this particular case. So I'm not saying it to be insulting to anybody. And there's a thing about this that I'll get to at the end for that. And trust me, it's fun. The rationale for me is that if the book is supposed to be there for everyone to know God and its ideals and its history for humanity and the planet and theoretically the universe and reality as we know it, should not simply anyone be able to say, I want to learn God? This is his text. This is how we're supposed to learn him. Good. Let me learn without needing someone else to speak the telephone, another fallible person explaining the information first. Now, obviously, as was said, if the problem is that it's written in idioms and some historical, some allegorical, some creative license, whatever the case may be, that now brings into the question of just how factual is the book itself. And we know full well there are a number of situations that are spoken in it which are antithetical to reality. I mean, speaking about how bats are birds, for instance, is no. We know that that is factually erroneous. Bats are mammals, similar to humans. And birds are descended, genetically speaking, from the dinosaur lineage. They are effectively modern dinosaurs. And that is something that is traceable genetically. It's information that we can use science to figure out through genetics. So if you start to run into this problem, should you be formally educated about the Bible? No. No, 100 times no. Because if someone tells you this is what the Bible is going to say and this is what it means, well, whose interpretation is that? Is it right? Is it wrong? How can you possibly know? And if you read it with an open mind, with a... if you take it at its own face value, with no preconceptions of what it's supposed to be, what the allegories are supposed to mean, what the historical pieces are supposed to be, if you take it as what it is, you find the beauty. You find the amazing pieces. You find the gorgeous ideals as to what humanity could be for each other, and you find all of the horrificness and the absolute duplicitedness and the backhandedness and the horror and the mayhem and the why would you ever think that this is a good thing, all wrapped up into one. And that's when people can actually look at it and go, this is supposed to be a good thing. Before we kind of rebut back onto this, we've got a question that was asked, and Marin, by the way, thank you for watching. I'm hoping that you're still watching. We don't get a list of who's watching. We just occasionally get a list that says number of people watching is 0, 1, whatever. Marin is asking, how do you go on live? It's a good question, Marin. As a matter of fact, Tech and I were just speaking about that just before the show. I'm looking into a way for people to be able to do that. However, because of the way that Google Hangouts operates, this is something that I'm being very cautious about, because I could theoretically invite almost anybody on, but having the control to moderate that and to manage that is going to be a little bit difficult for me. So I'm trying very carefully to figure out how to make that happen. But it is still something that's in the works. So don't think that I'm counting you guys out. I would like to have people come on every once in a while, but again, it's something I'm looking into as to how best to make that happen. But thank you. That is very flattering. It truly is. And love to be able to have folks come on and ask questions. I know it's going to sound like a weird thing to kind of back this one up a second. Joe, are you at all familiar with the TV show The Atheist Experience of Austin?
No, actually, I'm not. I don't know whether this is a blessing or a curse, but I have not actually followed general television in the last 10 years.
I've heard of it. Isn't that the one with Matt Dillahunty?
Yes, it is. All right, the reason why I bring that one up is that they have people call up to their show all the time, and they just take callers, you know, bang, 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 bang. Sometimes a few, sometimes many, depending as to how things go. But I would love to have the opportunity of having a section of the show specifically dedicated for people to come on with us, ask a question, and have us banter it through really quickly and see what we can go from there. So we can certainly see about that. Yeah, Joe.
Well, something that I had mentioned before when we were dealing with some, when you guys were dealing with some of the questions, is that there is something that is lost in translation when you simply ask a question via text as opposed to asking a question vocally, because...
Yeah, I've brought that up with some of Ross's questions in the past. The active, not the questions that he or she has emailed to us, but the ones where they've actually appeared in the live Q&A section before, based upon the wording of the text. And, you know, some of it was, well, you know, if I was somebody who was very insecure with myself, I would probably take a deep offense to the way this is worded. But at the same time, it's not that I'm above that. I've had much better education at interpersonal communication. I actually paid attention in classes and things like that. And I know that all this stuff I need is not there.
Exactly. Exactly right. Joe, you've hit it exactly right. There's a huge difference that can be taken from the actual interaction versus just the straight out text.
Yeah, because somebody could type something out, and here's the thing. It's not just that it might be missing your inflection, but the person who's reading it may inadvertently attach a inflection to it themselves as they're reading it, and it could be something entirely different from what was intended.
Yeah, and that's something that I've tried to battle with, and whenever that's come up, I make a big effort to try not to have that be a problem. I try.
There's no way for somebody to just record their question, you know, give them like a little 30-second or 15-second clip of a WAV file or MP3 file system, and then send it via email to just play and whatnot.
Well, funny you should say that, because that is also a possibility, although I'm not quite sure how to make that one work. But there is a system inside of the Google Hangouts for being able to play through YouTube videos through the system. And that's also a possible that we may be able to do in the near future.
You can always go the Howard Stern route and just put a big old speaker next to the microphone.
So essentially what you're suggesting is we could possibly do something where, you know, throughout the week people email audio questions and such, and then we play them at the end of the week and answer them on air.
Well, now see, that's the problem. I'm not quite sure how to play it through the system. There's a couple of pieces I'm still trying to investigate how to do it. Google Hangouts, for all its great ability for free, is a little bit of a kludge fest at times. So I'm still trying to kind of work my way through that. It's fun, isn't it?
Shujin, on the topic that you were discussing earlier about, you know, the fact that for a long time it was priests who were reading the holy texts, regardless of religion, and you know, disseminating that to the majority of the populace. Not to kind of point a spotlight or anything like that, but for a long time, it was illegal in Europe to translate or print the Holy Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was considered heresy. It was dubbed heresy by Pope Innocent III.
Yep.
The thing to keep in mind, people, is knowledge is power. And even if that knowledge is wrong, if you believe it to be the correct knowledge, or at least you believe somebody who has that knowledge is correct, how much power are you giving them through that kind of recognition? Because if everybody was able to read the Bible, very few people had translated texts, and we're talking kings, monarchs, so on and so forth. The common man having a translated Bible at the time, unheard of. And once you actually have the ability to read it yourself, what power does this person have over you anymore?
Yep. I'm sorry. Go on, Joe.
Well, it's just that I'm a strong proponent of the idea that religion did serve a purpose back before we had science, back before we even had religion truly predates most forms of government. It was, in fact, a form of government. It was a form of making sure that everybody had a common set of laws, a common set of morals, and that, you know, people weren't trying to kill each other. At least people from your group weren't trying to kill each other.
Okay, I was going to say, because they would flout the Bible as saying, it's time to go to war. If you don't believe, you know, you're not for your country.
Yeah. The Crusades? What are those?
They actually did a book on that concept called The Jester. If you haven't read it, you got to read it. It's fantastic.
Yeah, but it was really a way of coordinating a society of people, a group of people who lived together to keep them from killing one another.
Yep.
And that works so well, yes.
Yep. And funny enough, that's exactly where I was hoping that we were going to end up going. By the way, before we get into that, because that is the next why of it all, Thank you, folks, for watching the video. We're about a third of the way through the show. If you'd like to ask some Q&As of us, please, by all means, feel free. The Q&A system is up there and running. I am trying to keep track of the stuff going on over on Facebook and Twitter and the Q&A page and G+ all at the same time, as well as the email, so please feel free to take advantage of that. Email address, of course, is shujintribble@gmail.com, and all of these different areas you can find me under the name shujintribble, all one word. Now, Joe just brought something up that was exactly right, because once you've got a localized translation that the common man can read, and admittedly, literacy was very, very low at the time in Europe, and Tech, let me bring it over to you. If I remember right, it was Germany where the first localized translations for the masses was printed up, if I remember right. Yes?
The Gutenberg Bible came off, well, obviously, the Gutenberg printing press. And, yeah, it was mass-produced. I think there's actually a copy of it in the New York Library as a basically the equivalent of a museum piece. I can't remember if it's still there or if it has been moved to a museum and it gets carted back and forth. But it is in New York. Okay, Joe, no problem. It's a thick book. It's also old. It is a primary example of a mass-produced a piece of work, not on the level that we have today. I mean, today, if you have enough words written, enough pages written, you can go to find a printing press and just have your book printed out and stamped out as long as you've got the funds to do it. The Gutenberg, on the other hand, that was a printing press where they actually, you know, they had to manually set the letters. We have computers and machines to do all that stuff for us nowadays. And even though it took time, they were able to knock them out and get them distributed. There were people who did have a problem with that. And there were, you know, I don't know if Gutenberg ever felt fear for his life or not. I just hope that he was very happy with his accomplishment before he passed on.
Yeah, and, very much.
Because I appreciate it. I appreciate the fact, you guys can't see it, but I have bookshelves filled with all sorts of different types of books. I have fiction, I have comics, I have educational texts about all sorts of different subjects, mostly networking. That's my particular field there. But I even have some nonfiction stuff, some stuff about people's people who were interesting to me, about their lives. In most cases, it's actually science fiction authors, because I like to learn what makes a science fiction writer tick. It's different for each. You never know. And I will take the books down, and I will read them, and I will, in the act of reading, you can smell the pages, the pulp, and everything else. You can't do that with a Kindle, okay? I understand the digital age, but there is just an appreciation for these books that, you know, you're either a bibliophile or you're not. You either appreciate a book or you don't, and I do. And so every time I look at these books, you know, there is a huge history that comes along to the printing. Before that, to make a copy of the Bible, depending on where you lived in the world, you might not be able to. In other parts of the world, you would have what's called a family Bible. And the family Bible would be passed down from generation to generation. But if one of, let's say your family had so many family members that you branched off and lived in a, you know, maybe you moved a little bit further down the town or down the valley or whatever, to set up your own farm or whatever, you'd have to make your own. And that would involve sitting down and copying the Bible word for word.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people just look at the family Bible idea these days and just scoff at it because I can go buy a Bible, you know, right now down at 7-Eleven. But
Wait a minute. Why even bother buy it?
Well,
you can get them in PDF text format for free.
Exactly. Well, exactly. There's that too. It just makes it easier to get it. But back in the day, every Bible was printed or was made by hand, and it was a very valued object. And before the printing press, every Bible had been produced by scholars from the clergy by hand, and very oftentimes were very beautifully decorated by hand. I'm glad you mentioned the whole typography thing from Gutenberg, because I'm a graphic designer by education, and Gutenberg has been beat into my head over and over again. He was a goldsmith. That's what allowed him to be able to craft the letters. Was his family? His family were goldsmiths, mm-hmm. And to answer your question, yeah, he did get a lot of flack from, you said you didn't know whether or not he was ostracized for printing it. He actually did get an awful lot of flack for that. But
well, if you think about it, when the church has that kind of power, when any human being has that kind of power over another human being, and along comes Joe Blow, who goes, "Oh, look, I've got a copy of the same book that you're reading to everybody else. Oh, look, I'm sorry, what did you tell them? Oh, no, in here it actually says X, Y, and Z, not A, B, C. You're lying to the people." And all of a sudden the people that were following you are now going, "Wait a minute, you're lying to us? Well, there goes your power. There goes your authority." And we saw that in Russia. We saw in Russia that they felt Stalin and other appropriate people felt that there was a potential conflict of power between the church and the state. And until they really repressed them, and they made sure that the people understood they didn't want them to practice religion. It wasn't because atheism was a better idea. They were trying to take religion out of people's lives so that they didn't have any competition. Because once, and it took a little while, but once they really had the church out of power, and they did for a while, then they said, "Oh, we don't care if you want to believe anymore or not. Here's what you've got to do from now on." Yeah. And that was the attitude that was taken after they repressed the people and got them dominated to where they want them. And also the fact that the church understood, we're being allowed to practice and preach again, but if we say one thing against the state, they are going to kill us. We're going to keep this calm.
I was going to say it's a lot of it is just simply about power, because mm-hmm. entrenched power is strongest no matter what it comes from. Sean, by the way, thank you very much for listening and paying attention. Sorry, it took us a couple of seconds to get to your question. What is it all about? What we're discussing at this point was an emailed question that effectively came down to the question of do we think that a person needs to be formally educated before really reading through the Bible in order to get a better understanding of it? And the why about it all really goes into a lot of different pieces. At this point, where we're taking it from at this point is, what is the good or the bad for being able to just read through the book itself, whether educated or not at the moment? And where this is taking us right now, the why on this one, becomes a big question of where is the power seated at that point.
We were going through it looking at it from a historical view.
Right. Which at this point, politically speaking, like I had mentioned, the power for the individual to understand and to The power for the individual to better understand the rules and regulation that they are living under is an immensely powerful piece, because that's when the person, the individuals, can band together to say, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense, this is fair, this isn't fair, this is why. because when people have the understanding as to what's going on around them and the why, which is the whole reason for having started this vodcast in the first place, that's when change is able to happen. When information gets out and is examined, and it goes from there. Now, Joe, you've got a little bit more on the what happened with Gutenberg, with the Bible, with printing it up locally, and what ended up happening to him.
Well, it was actually a comment based on what Tech had said about, you know, the church decided to rein back on those rules because of governments. Not really. What happened was that the church recognized that when the Bible was translated and was mass-produced, it was available to a wider audience, and what ended up happening was a lot more of the public ended up becoming literate. And as a result, you know, at the same time, a lot of the public started to criticize what was said in the Bible. But at the same time, those who didn't criticize, a more literate and a more educated population was a more productive population. Wealth was being amassed over the average. The average wealth of, you know, the common person was skyrocketing in comparison to, you know, the years previous. And the church realized, well, hey, maybe this isn't such a bad thing, because as long as we have the patronage of at least a few of these people, we're still making more than we were when we had the patronage of a whole lot of dumb people.
Right, but it still took them a lot of centuries to get to that point of getting out of the mindset of, let's keep them illiterate, let's keep using that basically that weakness of theirs to get them to do whatever we tell them to do.
Yeah,
and you're right. It took them a while until the wealth became apparent between all that, and to figure out how to shoot down the dissidents that I shouldn't say shoot. That's a bad thing. How to squash the dissidents, the people who spoke out against the Bible, and make sure that they could repress that.
That's the thing. Knowledge is a tide.
And oh, yeah.
You can build a tide, you can build a dike, you can build a dam against it, but that tide's going to continue to build up. It's going to keep going, and you can repress it as long as you want, but eventually you're going to run out of strength to hold it back, and it will break through.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk a little something about the Bible itself. I want to specifically go back to Genesis, because it is the beginning of the Bible at large. It is one of the stories that is, for the most part, well-versed for most people, the vast majority of people. Mm-hmm. The overall story of Genesis, overall, is that there's God. God decides to make the universe, make light and dark, make the planet, make the sun and the moon, usually in that order, make plants, sometimes before there's a sun, sometimes after, it depends to which part of it is, make all the animals, make man, put man to sleep, break his chest open, and make woman, and then there they go. Oh, look, they went against what was told to them by a creation of gods, and God didn't know it, and then said, okay, for the rest of whatever, you're dead to me, and goodbye. Now,
wait, you forgot something.
Well,
let's just drown everybody in the process later on.
Well, that's
but that's still Genesis.
Yes, that is Genesis. But I mean, just going with that to start off with, and I will admit straight off the bat, I am omitting a crap ton of information, and there's a good reason for it, because the minutiae really isn't that important. The general bullet points are close enough.
Yeah, and we also have limited time here.
Yeah, exactly so. Now, science, if you tell somebody that this story is real, and you keep telling from the very beginning of consciousness for a new human, a child, and keep explaining, this is reality, this is reality, this is reality, this is reality, from the earliest times, that starts to get wired into their head to the point where it is reality, and you would not be able to change that without a lot of work. The best analog that I could describe it as would be, if you pour cement, it is amorphous, it clumps, it is wet, and it takes time to form. If you surround, perfect example, if you surround what is supposed to be an impression in the ground of a footprint or a hoof print or Bigfoot print or whatever the hell it might be, and you pour something akin to cement. It's actually latex that they use, but follow me for a second. If you
use plaster of Paris.
Right. Okay, perfect example. You pour that into a circular mold that you put down on the ground, and it forms into whatever it is that's in the ground. When it dries, you can then lift it up out of there, turn it over, and you will see exactly what was there.
You'll and see an impression only, of it.
Right. You will see it in reverse, which is effectively, it is still, you know, the piece. But in order to smooth that out to better comport with reality, in order to make that accept new information, you effectively have to break it. And that analog, when you talk about indoctrination for a mind, for a brain, is a real chilling concept.
Well, put it real simply, children are naturally born atheists. They have no concept of Ra or Thor or Odin or Allah or Yahweh or
any of them.
Or the Easter Bunny or freaking Santa Claus until somebody says something to them about it. They have no idea. They're not born with an ingrained nature to suddenly believe in God. They're born with a nature to learn and accept the knowledge that is passed on to them, because in the role of our species, it's assisted in survival. Parents typically pass on survival traits. Can we survive without religion? Sure, we already have a group of humans who their entire culture is completely lacking in any form of religion. And, they're fine. They have their own rules, their own ethics, morals, whatever you want to call them, and they're absolutely fine. And children are fine too. The only reason a child knows that it hurts to hit somebody is one of two ways. Either, now mind you, I'm talking about with zero adult supervision. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about just children all by themselves in a group. They know it hurts one of two ways. Either A, the other child goes, ow, that hurt, or B, the other child hits them back, in which case they go, oh, wow, that actually hurts. You know, and it all varies depending on each child. But that eventually gets learned, that there's communication there. So if you raise the children without indoctrinating them in any form of religion, okay, they're going to grow up not asking about gods. They're not going to think that things are happening because of gods. They're going to be able to live their life, and they'll still ask questions. They'll still be decent human beings. They can still learn laws and rules and regulations. They don't need God in their life to become attorneys or judges or astronauts or street sweepers or coal miners.
You can just learn it from each other. Joe, it sounded like you wanted to pop in on that one, too.
Well, it's just that this idea of the whole indoctrination thing goes well beyond, religion. I mean, you want an easier allegory for it. What did your mother always tell you about going swimming after you've eaten?
Oh, God, yes. I mean,
stay
out of the water for at least half an hour, or else you'll start to get cramps, and you might drown.
Mine was stay near the shallow end.
Yeah, well, there is absolutely no evidence, many people have tried this sort of thing. It doesn't affect how you swim or how your body functions in the water at all, period. It's just something that somebody had said a long time ago, and then, their mother told them, they told their daughter, they told or their son, and, it had been passed on from generation to generation until it was considered common knowledge, even though it was wrong.
It's very, very much so. And it's...
You know how it probably came about? Somebody probably ate, went into the water, and something bad happened to them. And we didn't live in an enlightened age where we could study what happens to the human body after it eats and attempts to go swimming.
Yeah, well, somebody just came to an early conclusion. For all we know, somebody might have just been stung by a jellyfish, and that's what happened, but, nobody saw the jellyfish, so...
And it's more possible it happened more than once, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, which it is... Yeah. It's the problem with these kinds of questions, and please don't think that you can't email these questions. These we love this stuff, even though it can be a little bit difficult and a little daunting to unpack these. It's so worthwhile. It really, really is. So, thank you. The biggest problem with the thing is, like I had said at the beginning for my own piece. No matter which way you go down, you're going to go down whichever rabbit hole you've chosen. And it's almost impossible to change which way you go. The biggest problem of it all is, again, going back to why. I want to kind of go backwards a little bit. I want to go back onto the in the next 15 minutes or so that we got before we have to start wrapping. Why would it be necessary? Why would some people think it would be necessary to need, to require, require is not the right word for it, to need education about the Bible and what it says and why it says, instead of just going into it cold? And Joe, I'm gonna give you first crack on this one.
Well, I'd seen a lot of news on this sort of thing. Down in Georgia a couple of years ago, there was a school system that had actually started putting into its textbooks, in the front of its textbooks, it started putting in biology textbooks. It started putting in a caveat saying, at this time, evolution is only a theory.
Oh, jeez.
And that even grew to be worse because a lot of the parents and a lot of the teachers at this school started, petitioning to have secular education or creationism taught as well.
Mm-hmm.
And...
that's what the church is for.
Exactly, but here's the thing. The church, nobody's telling you to go to church except for your parents and your priest. You have to go to school, at least in the U.S., generally speaking. You have to go to school.
Right.
And they see that as their last stand, their last bastion to be able to get their message out to a young, impressionable audience.
Yep.
And they look to take advantage of these children, these school children, during a time that they are supposed to be absorbing as much information as they can They are trying to put forth their own agenda into that to try to get the children to absorb that as well. Something I really do not agree with.
Yeah, which I forget who it was, but wasn't it one of the popes who had at one time said, give me a child until he's 10 and I will bring you back the man? Or something to that effect?
I'm not entirely sure, but I can check.
Well, hey, yeah, if they're going to teach religion in schools, they better make sure they teach every single one and every single variation. Let's see that happen.
Give me a child of 7, and I will give you a man. And this is attributed to the Catholic order, specifically the Jesuits.
Well, wait a minute. I thought they didn't condone homosexuality.
Well, what the statement is supposed to mean is, if you have control of the young mind until from the beginning until about that point, you will have control of the person through the rest of their life.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And there is, yes, go.
Well, for example, the reason why we start children in public school in the U.S. at the age of, what is it, usually 6 or 7?
Five, six.
The reason why we start them at that age is because that's the age where they start developing those reasoning skills and start absorbing a lot more of the information around them. Up until that point, you know, a child is a child, still exploring the world that they can see at this time. They don't really have that concept or that cognitive ability to grasp.
They're basically still an animal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, unfortunately, yes. But the idea that school is from, you know, this age to this age is to be able to get them to absorb as much of that information as possible and to be able to expose them socially to other children and adults so that they can grow socially as well.
That way they can find out it hurts when they punch one and they get punched exactly. Back. Like, but I said, they're still an animal.
But that's basically what that quote leads to, is that, you know, you give me a child of this impressionable age, and I will give you back someone who I have molded to be what I consider to be a upstanding member of society.
Of religious society.
Yeah, of my society.
Yeah. Okay. Tech, so for you at this point, why should somebody be formally educated in the holy scriptures or text or whichever one?
Well, as for whether or not they should be formally educated in the Bible, honestly, I don't think so. You've got several things up for consideration. What age is most appropriate to teach? Mm-hmm. What other background and knowledge have they had before they go into this supposed formal education of the Bible? And how do you go about choosing which Bible is right? If you take one person from each variation of the Catholicism all by itself has over 40, I've said it before, I'll say it again, over 40,000 documented variations of itself, not all in this country, mind you, but let's just assume one quarter of that, so 10,000, are in this country alone. And you put them all in the same room and they all have to say which version of the Bible that they know it to be 100% true.
Okay? Oh, God, I'm sorry, but I have to stop you right here. Now I've got it stuck in my head. 10,000 sects enter, one leaves. That's exactly what I've got in my head now.
Exactly. You know, those Bibles are great. You can carve out and put little flasks in them, or guns, or knives, or whatever. Choose your weapon. It brings new meaning to a term, Bible thumper.
Well, that idea...
I say just glue it to a baseball bat with some nails and really go to town. Zombies, be scared.
That's exactly why they had the Council of Nicaea, is because they had so many contradicting stories and contradicting... Proverbs and interpretations of the Bible at that time, that they pretty much gathered together the most powerful people of the Christian world and said, "Hey, guys, we got to go ahead and clear some things up.
Before they killed themselves off, yeah. But that's the point here. You know, where is this formal education coming from? Who has validated it? When you have a formal education of 1 plus 1 equals 2, there is a mathematical and scientific background behind that that is pretty much globally accepted. There's no religion that's globally accepted all across the world by every single person. Now, do some people not accept math? Absolutely. But when, as far as the mathematical community goes, 1 plus 1 equals 2. The only time 1 plus 1 equals 1 is, I believe, Marxism.
There are four lights.
Yeah, let's not go there.
But here's... Well,
I'll give you the Spocker if you're not careful.
Yeah. The thing about the whole public education based on religion, we have that already. And I'm not talking about the people trying to put it into primary schools. That I don't agree with, because primary schools, classes are mandatory, going to the school is mandatory. We have public education in religion. That's what college is for. We have entire college courses devoted. You know, I guarantee you, you can find a college course for practically any religion you want to study. But the thing is, it's what you want to study. It's something you choose to do. Nobody's telling you to do it. Nobody's holding a gun to your head or a truant officer at your back to tell you to do it.
I agree. It's it gets to be a voluntary instead of involuntary piece, and maybe in a way that's one of the most important pieces of it at all too.
And see the other concept of being formally trained in the Bible, you know. Not everybody is of the same faith. Those that believe in a God or many gods, you know, why should they be forced to read the Bible if their faith doesn't require that?
Yeah.
And so, and why should I be required to go to college, which is basically what we've kind of agreed on, is that if you're going to have formal education in the Bible, make sure it's after grade school and all the basic stuff. Why should I be forced to go to college and pay somebody to teach me how to interpret the Bible when I can just go to the local store and pick one up and read it for myself, exactly, using the skills and knowledge that I have? Now, if I do that and then I have questions, well, heck, I still don't have to go to a college for that. I can go to a local church, because I don't care what state you live in, you probably cannot travel more than 10 to 15 blocks without finding at least one church. It may not be the one you want. It might be Methodist, or Baptist, or Pentecostal. Oh, I said it that time. Or evangelical even, which means it's going to be real loud on that one, and you might get some free food in the process, but, you know, hey. But I, once again, you know, why should I have to pay to go to a college to learn how to properly interpret it when there's all these other resources? It's all about fear. Right now, because I have a buddy who is he is a Christian, and one of the things that he constantly does point out is that Christians in other parts of the world are attacked, they are killed, they are tortured. And yes, they are. So are atheists. So are other people of conflicting religious beliefs for the area that they've entered. The point is that they are scared right now because of what the politicians in the United States of America have done. The stances that they've taken have actually encouraged people to pull away from Catholicism. When you get on TV, national television, you say, vote for me because I'm going to take away the rights of your wife and your sister and your daughter and your grandmother because my religion says so and I'm of this faith, and people are going to back away from that. And that's exactly what's happening. So now, right now, I believe, I feel with my heart, and it's being backed by the evidence that I'm seeing with my eyes and ears, and what I'm reading in the newspapers, seeing in the news, and the polls that are being taken, you know, all the evidence that's being put together, along with this feeling that they are running scared, and they don't want people to have the science backgrounds or the math backgrounds or, you know, the skepticism, because most religions, most aspects of most religions fall flat on their face, and without that, that quote unquote proper college training, there's no way to defend themselves. That's where all the apologists come in. That's all the college training would be, is sitting there paying a college to listen to some guy or woman who's an apologist for the Bible try to explain away every little nook and cranny that skepticism has a problem with.
Yep. Joe, I'm gonna give you another couple of moments over here to pop something else in here before we have to wrap this part up and get to the one last piece that I got.
You would ask me to do that right as I forget what it was I was going to say.
Trust me, I know that feeling all too well, man.
Three samurai walk into a bar.
You're not helping.
Would it have been better if he had said 47 of them?
Oh, no.
How about 300?
I have not watched that movie, and I don't think I will. But, I'm trying to think of what it was I was going to say. I got nothing.
Well, if it was about the Bible, it could have been about rape or genocide or torture or infinite love after...
Oh, doy. What you'd said about, you know, not everybody shares the same beliefs. Look, we don't even have to go to as extreme as comparing, you know, a Buddhist with a Shintoist or a Muslim or anything like that. Just look at the Christians. And I'm not even talking about the really radical sects like, you know, Mormons.
could you perhaps mean some of the ones that don't accept science, like the Amish Wolverine? How many weeks is that in a row?
Or even further than
16.
That. You as a Christian would say that, you know, love thy neighbor and all that stuff. But you're a Christian. Fred Phelps was a Christian, too.
Mm.
Do you agree with how he interprets the Bible? How he feels you should perform or live your life as a Christian? Just that alone. Religion is not a universal thing.
Yeah, you're quite right. And there's still a lot of pieces about this that are very odorous to me. And we may end up revisiting this at a later time, because there's still some pieces that I feel we may not have been able to unpack properly, but we'll see about that. I'm sorry?
Well, I was going to say that this is something that could be discussed over the course of years, let alone, you know, an hour and a half.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem with this particular show is that trying to find the underpinnings, the why of all this stuff, can really take a lot of rabbit holes if you're not careful, and not all of them are really worthwhile, although the exploration of them all is really what the point of it all is. So it gets a little bit hair-raising, no pun intended on that one. Let me see if I pronounce this correctly. Is this tourmaline? Tourmaline?
Tourmaline, from the look of it.
Yeah, tourmaline. First off, thank you very much for paying attention. And what's going on? The question that we had been talking through was, should one have formal education about the Bible, or just in general, before really tackling and trying to understand the Bible? And if you go back through the YouTube archive afterwards, you'll be able to take a look and see how we've kind of come through this one. However, I'm not going to say he, she, because as usual, we don't, if we don't know, I'm not even going to try to go with it. But Tourmaline had asked over here, do you really have to marry a rapist? According to the Bible, yes. A rapist is punished by having to marry the person they raped. Now, Joe, it sounds like you're trying to find the chapter and verse on that one, eh?
Quite literally, yes.
I've forgotten where it is. It is, I think it's in Exodus. I could be wrong. trying to remember. I think it was one of the ones, some of the things that Moses had said exterior to the Ten Commandments, which I'm not going to pick on the Ten Commandments specifically, but thou shalt not rape would seem to be a really good one to have put in there, as opposed to you can't take my guns away from me, or whatever the heck the list of 10 is supposed to be.
The one where that comes from is Deuteronomy 22, verses 28 through 29, which commands it commands a rapist to marry his victim.
Could you read it off directly?
Let me go ahead and look it up.
Which one is it that you're grabbing this one from?
Biblia.com, a Bible study site.
Okay.
Verse 29, if a man meets a virgin who is not betrothed and seizes her and lies with her, and they are found, 29, then the man who lay with her shall give to the father of the young woman 50 shekels of silver, and she shall be his wife, because he has violated her. He may not divorce her in all his days.
Now, here's the problem with that. There are some apologists who will say the reason for that is because she is now defiled property.
Yes, this comes from a time when women were property of their fathers and husbands.
Yep. And as defiled property, she would no longer command a high enough dowry. So this was a way of making sure that she was kept safe with society and was not ostracized and could actually have a living outside of real quick, your thought on that one real quick?
It's real simple. You look in the Bible and it still talks about the same thing. There are people in the United States of America that are married couples who, when they go to church, the women, the wives, are not allowed to talk in their churches. They have to wait till they go home and ask their husbands if they have any questions about what their priest had said. Mm-hmm. And they actually, the priest expects that behavior because that's what's printed in the Bible.
Yeah.
And then you have in, not only in Catholicism, but in other religions as well, not only are women seen as property of the men, but the fathers or the husbands, but in some, they're actually seen being as less value than a goat.
Yeah. Exactly. And then this,
especially if the goat's a virgin. You have to check for that, though.
Not in New Zealand.
nay.
But this goes back to what I was saying earlier, that, you know, compare the Old Testament to the New Testament. The New Testament reads like you would expect typical religious jargon to read. But the Old Testament reads more like, you know, civil bylaws. It really did represent more of a government system than it did a religious. It represented,
especially one of love.
And, yeah. And Tourmaline, if you're still listening, if you ask somebody who is of the faith about that, and they have listened to apologists talk before, they will say, oh, well, Jesus Christ came down and died and changed all that. Well, if you continue to read the Bible, which we're talking about, reading it without having somebody who's proficient in the Bible explain everything to you so you don't have to read it. But if you actually read the Bible, Jesus actually in several books states that he's not there to change the laws at all. He's there to enforce them.
To be the fulfillment of, in some translations.
Yes, in that. Granted, he may have come down to try to sacrifice himself to abolish original sin, yeah. Which is what I took away from it. But that doesn't change the thou not shalt kill, that shall, you know, and the rape and the slaughter and the genocide and everything else.
And before you ask yourself, what would Jesus do, just remember that flipping tables and whipping bankers is not outside that purview.
Or encouraging people to walk around a city and have it collapse with horns. And, wait, was that Jesus?
That was the Battle of Jericho. That was crap. Was that Moses? No. Damn it.
It's been such a long time, man. And people who are watching this.
That was Joshua.
Joshua. Okay, thank you. We're all laymen here. We make mistakes. Yes. We make errors. We're man. Those of us who are men are man enough to admit it. Those of us who are women enough to admit it, but they're not here today. And I've even admitted making mistakes in the past, too. And I'll correct them if I'm wrong. So we're not experts. We're not people you would see on TV. We're not people you're going to see running for government office in most cases. Although, if Susan, if you run out, you got my vote, buddy.
Well, Susan and I are already running in, 2024?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, vote Murray Treble. He's running for vice president because he knows his job will be secure then, because nobody's going to even want to. Plenty of people are going to try to shoot me. Nobody's going to succeed because, A, I've been shot, didn't take, and B, I'm armed.
Plus, we're also reviving an old political party from the late 40s and early 50s that was started by the late, great, wonderful humanitarian, the late Mrs. George Burns. Gracie Allen started the surprise party, so we decided that that was probably the best way to go.
The name alone sounds like you would expect the politicians that would be having their debate to be on stage, to have the cameras ready, and all of a sudden, they're in the middle of the debate, and somebody just comes running on stage and goes, "Surprise, mother!" And, drops the F-bomb while in a suit and tie, and, just, "I'm here for the debate." And
okay,
calm right down.
Who the hell gave you my plans?
In actuality, I believe that the best way of doing that would probably be to have somebody come out in a giant Pinkie Pie outfit with an actual working party cannon, shooting streamers all over the place.
I'll let you handle that one, Shujin.
How about a Bozo the Clown suit?
No, because then we have to ask Mr. Garibaldi to kindly get off the stage I can get things done.
We need to dress you up like the Joker. I'm getting the evil eye. I'm getting the stink eye.
Oh, God.
And to our friend who is writing to us in either some scripts, Asian of some sort.
It appears to be Korean.
Hi back.
I do not know. However, thank you for watching. We appreciate it.
I apologize if I am wrong, however. Keep in mind, most of my experience with Oriental language comes from the fact that I spent 2 years in South Korea as a soldier, and that's where a lot of my influence for that comes from. I could be wrong. It looks Korean because usually Korean is boxy like that, but then again, this could just be the digitized version of another language. I might be wrong.
Yeah, it's like when you see Russian either handwritten versus being typed on a computer screen, there's some angular areas to what would normally be a very fluid script. I'm not very good at reading Russian or speaking it just because I haven't had practice in a very long time, but I've always loved how it looks on paper after it's been written. It's just wonderful flowing and curves and everything else. There's a beautiful art to many languages. Japanese as an example. English language just using calligraphy looks gorgeous to me.
Oh. And Shujin, to answer your confusion earlier, Tourmaline is female.
Okay. Well, then thank you very much. I'm going to take the last couple of moments over here to talk about something that has come up recently that if you were watching me over on G+, you would have seen me make mention to it. I don't usually talk about a lot of stuff that goes on in my real life that is a day-to-day kind of thing. I'll talk about some of the bigger things. For instance, the fact that I've been a widower for fast approaching onto the 9-year mark, that my daughter is doing wonderfully, even with everything else. The Ride for Roswell, which is coming up, which I got to get a little bit more going on that. However, something had come up the last couple of days that I made a post on G+, and it's odd. And I'm not gonna quote anything or any particular person, but if folks want to go ahead and look me up and look at my listings over on G+, you'll be able to figure this one out pretty quickly. What ended up happening is that over the last couple of years, I've noticed what would appear to be a disturbing trend towards religious entitlement encroaching into my daughter's public school. And not at the particular school level, but at the district level. From third grade, when my daughter had found out that the fifth graders, the last year in her school, her elementary school, every year near the end of the school year, they have a sleepaway day where they go to a camp and they learn some skills and do fishing, go out on boats, or, you know, that kind of thing.
And it's, is this the one I heard about on Wednesday night?
Part of it, yes.
Okay.
And for 2 years, she had been looking forward to this. I mean, really looking forward to this. And then when the time finally came for the stuff to come around for us teachers, for the us parents to sign off on, you know, the stuff came through, and I'm just like, okay, well, you know what? Let me look up about this this place, because, you know, the permission slip's got all the things that say, when are you going? When are you coming back? How is transportation provided? Who's going to be there? Where are they going? Mm-hmm. And I went and I looked up the information about the particular place, because I was like, you know, where is this actually going to be? And that's when I found out that the name of the place that was on the permission slip was not the full name of the place. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that the full name of the place included the name that was on the permission slip, but also Bible study retreat. And that's when, you know, things started to go up in my head of, whoa, wait a minute, what? And I sent, you know, my concern off to her teacher, who said, you know, if there was any kind of, you know, wrong stuff going on, I'd be the first one to raise up a problem about it.
And from what I remember hearing you talk, you actually took a relatively calm approach of, okay, they may just be using the space.
Exactly.
Because that does happen.
Exactly.
And I thought that was very mature of you.
Right. And that was the piece that I took of it. If they're just renting the space, and that's it, no interaction from the staff and whatnot, no proselytization, I could get away with letting them know that I think this is a bad idea, but giving them the benefit of the doubt. She came back afterwards, had a great time. She'd opened up the nightstand, and, well, there was a Bible in there. She'd opened it up to a random spot. She correctly explained to me a scene that she had read, which turned out to be the Battle of Jericho with the trumpets, and I was able to properly identify that from the way that she described it, and I let them have it. Because if you're going to be renting space in a Bible retreat, the least you should do is remove the Bibles. I let them know full well I did not appreciate that at all. But I let it go. Now that she is gone from there, I'm going to be finding out, are they continuing to have it there? Because that's a red flag.
Yeah.
Now, come forward a year, sixth grade. Moved up to the middle. And the chorus concerts are going on. And I'm listening to some of the pieces that are being performed. And some of them are really good. Some of them are a little bit more complicated than I think the kids were ready for, but as it may. But I would guesstimate 30 to 40% of the music that was sung at the previous concert, the spring Easter concert, were very specifically religious in tone, in words, in descriptions, in story. specifically about Moses, the parting of the Red Sea, the specifically calling out for God, and I was very unhappy with this, but I also thought on it a little bit also. The Christmas concert, a little bit religious, kind of spiritually, kind of okay. It's Christmas. It's one of those things. I don't really like it, but it wasn't a lot. All right. I'll give you the little bit. And then this one for the Easter breaky kind of springy kind of thing. That was a lot. I don't really like what's going on with that one. Something's not quite right. That's really not good. And now the next one is coming up next week. And there's, again, specifically Christian religious music that's in there. Relatively young music, too. That's one of which is specifically saying, if you want to get through your troubles, you call on God to help you to get through your troubles. And I'm kind of paraphrasing, kind of not. I don't remember what the exact lyric is, but that it pretty much there.
Yeah, every time I hear Jesus Take the Wheel, I just assume that somebody's about to be visiting the ER very soon.
Right. Now here's the problem. I posted on G+ that I did not post about all of these pieces. My post on G+ was pretty generic. I think that there is a pattern that I may need to talk with the school district about religious encroachment. And I put the hashtags of do the right thing, what is the right thing, scared out of my mind. And the first response that I got back about that one was that very accusatory. Why aren't you going to let your daughter get a full and robust education? Are you not going to let them teach the Bible as literature? What about the title for East of Eden? Are you going to allow her to understand what that's all about? What about if Tolkien's Lord of the Rings is part of the curriculum and it's Catholic overtones, or are you going to allow her to read all that? And a couple of other things on that, building and building and building in a snowballing fashion, shut up, Joe, and it became this monstrous avalanche of why won't you let your daughter be taught? This is just unbelievable. And I had to take a step back from this one and because I started to type up on this one. I had like 3-4 different things that I wanted to put into this response to the whole thing, and I had to stop. I just deleted it all, and I had to go, well, wait a minute. First off, if we're going to talk about intent on authorship, Tolkien intentionally did not write it for anything. He wrote it so people could read into it whatever they wanted to. But that's not even what we're discussing here. I didn't tell you what I'm talking about here, and I'm not going to. That's not what we're discussing here. It's got nothing to do with it. But if the Bible were being taught as literature, would I have a problem with it or any of these other books? I don't know. Because there's a lot to try to unpack with what if they assigned book X without knowing what it is that they're looking for or what the book is or what's going on at the time. I'm not even going to try to tackle that because I got far more pressing information that I have to deal with first.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I had somebody else, not white knight, but actually come in and say, look, I think you're going a little overboard on this. He's not talking about being afraid in any way of religion. He's trying to make sure that things are staying the way that they're supposed to. Joe?
Well, two things. One, if the Bible was being taught as literature, it would be terrible literature. I mean, the characters are terribly one-dimensional. But on top of that, this is not about being afraid of religion or anything like that. Schools are, in our country, now if you're watching from outside the U.S., I apologize if things work differently there, but at least here in the U.S., the school system is a public domain. Public schools are a public domain. They are paid for by taxpayer money, which means that they are supported by the United States government. The United States government, in its First Amendment, in the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, which, for all intents and purposes, is treated as the United States government, the Constitution outlies everything that the government is supposed to be doing, which is why making an amendment to it is such a hassle for us. But the very First Amendment, which is part of the Bill of Rights, was that it guaranteed American citizens freedom of religion to perform whatever religion they see fit, that the government shall make no provision to recognize or support a religion, to teach in a pub, and to compound on that, it doesn't just give you the freedom to practice whatever religion you want to do, but it also gives me the freedom from whatever religion you happen to be practicing. You start putting a religious education into public schools. Number one, you're violating the fact that the government is not supposed to recognize or provide for any religious
sect. Any religion, period.
Yeah.
Well, but you know what? Also, I want to cut you off real quick because you're on a great point, but it doesn't click with a lot of people who are of the Christian background because they see atheism as a bad idea. So let me put it this way for you. If you have you are a Christian, you have your children in a public school, and you have demanded that their school teaches the Christian faith. Now, mind you, that opens up a can of worms that makes, if the school is going to cater to your religious needs, they need to cater to the non-religious and all the other religious as well. So now there is somebody, another student in your child's school who is Muslim. So now, in addition to the morning Christian prayer, there is also now a Muslim prayer.
Exactly.
You, as a Christian parent, are going to raise holy hell.
That's what I was actually going to take a step toward next, was the fact that we start putting a specific religion's doctrine into our school systems. Sure, in the United States, the majority would be Christian, but you've also got, you've got Muslims, you've got Hinduists, you've got Buddhists.
Wiccans.
This is the whole purpose of the First Amendment, the freedom of religion. And to go ahead and make a Christian studies mandatory in a public school is to infringe on the rights of those who aren't Christians, not just the atheists. Christians, I'm sorry, but it's not just you and us. There's a whole slew of other players.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best ways that it was described as far as to how to deal with the question of religion in government was, and I've forgotten who it was that said it. I think it was Mark Twain, though I could be wrong. I'm very likely wrong. But it was described this way. If you want to live on a diet, that's fine. But don't tell me and my family that we're not allowed to have steak because you can't have steak. That's where it comes down to.
Yeah.
Don't tell my family what we can do because you can't, because whatever. Now, how this comes down to government is, here in the United States, is very simple. Government cannot assist or hinder the free exercise of the individual through its own action, which means any governmental agency is not allowed to take sides. If you go to sleep, where is religion while you're sleeping? There is no religion happening while you are sleeping. Government is supposed to do what it does without consideration for any religion. If they want to stay open on a Sunday, that is their choice. They're not supposed to be bound, and there's the rub. Supposed to be. The founding fathers, while they were still alive, passed treaties and laws that said to the effect, we are not in the business of religion and never should be. The treaty with Libya was a prime example. It was passed unanimously by people who were the founding fathers, who were still alive, unanimously. We are, this country was not founded in any way on the Christian religion. The religious, oh God, what was it? Virginia's Statute on Religious Freedom, which was an immensely, immensely powerful statement, fits on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And if you look that one up, it basically says, we're not supposed to be involved in religion, period. And if any government of this people should come back later and say differently, you're abdicating your responsibility. In a nutshell, he came down and said, if you try to change that, you're doing it wrong. And that was Jefferson.
Yeah, and that's the thing that keeps me up at night, is that our country was founded not on the idea of religious freedom or, you know, freedom from tyranny, but on the express matter of personal individual liberties. That is why we have so many amendments speaking of the individual in the Constitution.
Yes, and that's where the biggest difference came with our country versus many, if not all, previously.
Exactly. And what keeps me, what frightens me the most, it's hard for some people to hear a veteran speaking poorly of his own country, but unfortunately I have to call my own country out on this, and if I don't, somebody has to. That's kind of our responsibility as American citizens. We are supposed to question our government. But the idea that the government has found many a way to circumvent many of those liberties just in the last couple of decades, and they've actually gotten you to applaud them as they do it.
One of the things that I think is a founding principle of this country is the idea of the fair and level playing field, or battlefield, take it however you like. The bottom line is, when everyone has an equal opportunity, when no one has an unfair advantage to begin with, when no one is given a handicap to start off the play, everyone has the equal opportunity to say, this is what I believe, and this is why I think my idea is better. And people can gravitate one way or the other as they see fit, without interference, external. The government is supposed to be around to lay down the sod, to put out the stakes, to lime out the playing field, and to smooth out the rough edges and make sure that everybody has room to play and nobody has the high ground or the low ground.
Yeah. And
everyone plays equal.
Yeah, and before anybody tries to say that, yes, there are different opinions in our government, but it's the majority that gets that wins the vote, and so on. In regards to, you know, voting for a particular representative, yes, you're right. You're absolutely right. But in regards to liberties, freedoms for and from something, our government has repeatedly stood up to say, even if this would benefit this majority, if it so much as hinders one American citizen, we cannot allow that.
Tech, I'm going to give you your last stand on this one before we just close up shop now.
I love my country very much. I fear my government, not because I should fear my government. My government should fear me and the power of my vote. But our government, the U.S., United States of America, the government has been taking those votes and choosing to manipulate them. Am I declaring that there's somebody going into the House of Representatives and manipulating votes and things like that? No. What I mean is that they've been manipulating through lies and scare tactics and other such means that are in many ways legal, though unethical. And it's a case of there are many people who either A, choose not to see it, B, can't see it, or see, just, you know, they don't pay attention. It's not that they can't see it. It's not that they don't want to see it. It's just they've got other things that's going on in their lives that take a lot more focus. And granted, I can understand that to a degree.
Yeah, flies under the radar.
Exactly. There is a lot of legislation that gets passed under the radar. And when I see a news article popping up going, hey, you know, did you know that Comcast is sending tens of thousands of dollars to each and every member of the FCC that's on a particular panel working on net neutrality? Guess what? That gets my attention real freaking quick. And yes, I'm going to speak out on Facebook or Twitter. I'm not so active on Google Plus in that respect. But and then I have friends, and they go, why is this a big deal to you? Why is it a big deal to me? Because it impacts my life. Think about it. If I want to visit Facebook, but they haven't paid Comcast X amount of dollars, and so now I can't either A, I can't visit it, or B, if I do, it's going to go at the speed of an old 14.4 baud modem. Guess what? I grew up with those things. I grew up with a 2400 baud modem. I remember those days. I don't want to go back to living those days, okay? And you know if what? You haven't lived those days, I've got an IBM PC Junior somewhere. We could relive this.
I think that's a good spot to end you off right on there. Joe, last bow that you want to put on this one quick.
To comment on what Tech had said, there's a lot of people who are under the impression that in any way questioning your government is somehow unpatriotic. Ladies and gentlemen, if questioning your government was unpatriotic, we'd all still be British.
That is gorgeous.
Bravo, sir. Bravo.
Don't call me sir. I work for a living.
I use sir as a form, a respectful form.
Yeah. The joke is I was enlisted, so.
Okay, asshole.
Thank you.
And with that, we're going to get ourselves on out of here. There's a piece that one of these days I do want to cover to specifically talk about the First and Second Amendments, not on the same night, because those two are freaking immense pieces to unpack, and I'm sure that they're going to be really interesting to discuss, especially with folks who are not U.S. citizens. As always, I want to thank my panel tonight. Tech, thank you as always for joining.
Absolutely, man. Rock on.
And Joe, thank you very much for coming in quite literally last minute.
Well, yeah, I figured you guys probably needed a hand. It was, you know, two of your usuals are kind of off in the ether at the time, so yeah, I'm happy to help.
True that. And hopefully when we get the opportunity of discussing first and second, if you might be available, I would love to have your input on that.
I could talk for hours on that one.
Yes, but we only officially have 90 minutes.
Yeah, do you want me to leave the handguns alone? Because where did I put it? Okay, never mind.
We will discuss at another time. In any event, I want to thank you all for having watched and for getting through this, especially those of you that have been watching after the fact on YouTube. We do greatly appreciate it. As always, if you would like to send an email over to me so that we can see about including topic ideas or to cover questions or commentary that you've got, please, by all means, email me, shujintribble@gmail.com. I do not always get to see the commentary on the videos. I'm still kind of working my way through it. It's much more a hobby than a full-time gig, so please bear with me a little bit as I get through that. If you would like to see about participating in the show, of course, I'm working on that a little bit at a time, so please just be patient on that. If you would like to follow me on any of the major IM systems or whatnot, just search for Shujin Tribble, usually just all one word, and you will find me all over the freaking place. And for those of you that have been taking the time to watch, to comment, to give us ideas, pointers, even dissenting opinions, especially dissenting opinions, thank you. Because, as I said at the very top, the whole purpose of this show is to really describe, to unpack, to examine why something is or is not a particular way. And that takes a lot of getting used to. It's not an intuitive process. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of creativity. It takes a lot of really trying to look outside of what we normally do. And sometimes that's not very comfortable. Sometimes it's necessary. And sometimes it's just straight out fun. So thank you for helping us with that. The next show is scheduled to be the 18th of this month, and at the moment I do not have a topic idea. However, the link to the current list of possible topics via Google Drive is in the description field, and go ahead and click into that. I will see about trying to decide on what the next topic is going to be within the next couple of days. I hope to have that ahead of time. If you follow me on Google Plus and you would like to be kept specifically up to date on what's going on, please send me an email message one way or another, or some kind of a message directly on G+, on Twitter, Facebook, whatever, and say, I want to be included in the holy crap circle. I want to make sure that folks get the opportunity. And I do put out the announcements publicly, as well as specifically to the Google Plus group, Holy Crap. I try not to spam groups all over the place, because that just gets too damn annoying. I see too many of that. But thank you. There are a number of groups, a number of podcasts that you can follow. We did a show about that a couple of weeks back, where you'll be able to get better information, other information. And I want to specifically call out and thank Thomas and the Bible. If you have considered learning about the Bible, listening to someone read the Bible with commentary, Thomas and the Bible is the way to go. It is a slog. It hurts in a lot of times. But getting through a lot of this is what's given me the impetus to really go and do this show. It's really, really important to understand it, especially if you are some brute of Christian. It's a big deal. We will look forward to seeing you guys again another time, possibly next week, or if you're watching this from the future, as soon as you click into the next video. As always, it is my grand pleasure and my honor to be doing for you guys. As always, Matane Fujin, dream of me. Until the next time we get together, everyone, as always, I wish you the peace I no longer have. I wish you the strength that I've learned. I wish you well. Until that very next time we get together, everyone, good night.
You've been listening to Holy Crap, the Vlogcast. feel free to leave a comment on the show's website at holycrapthevlogcast.com, where you'll also find links to our Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Google Plus pages. Theme music provided by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. On behalf of all of us here, thank you for listening.